And I know there's been like a lot of talk recently about who revitalized the drum and bass scene in the United States and whether or not it's important who did that. Do you feel like it really needed to be revitalized? And how do you feel about being a part of that?
The word that I like to use right now is it's going through a renaissance.
Yeah, I think that's a good word for it.
Yeah.
That's a good word for it. That means it's never been anywhere, but it's healthy and continuing to be healthy. And
yes, it's continuing to be healthy. It's taking its multivitamin right now.
I like that.
Hey guys, welcome back to Rave Culture Cast, your weekly guide to the EDM community, music festivals, and more. I'm your host, Emma Kapotis. Happy Wednesday, fam. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode. This one is about to pop off, guys. I'm so excited about this week's guest, and we also have the introduction of a new interviewer who is joining the team, Alex Amaro. So we're about to get into all that in just a second. But first, of course, you guys can connect with us at Rave Culture Cast on all of the platforms. All of that will be linked down below, along with our Discord community, our Facebook group, if you guys want to come join the fam. I want to plug a couple quick things, you guys. If you guys need tickets to any of the following Insomniac events, you know I've always got you. You can use my affiliate links down below to pick up your tickets. I believe Project Low is almost sold out. I'm going to be there this weekend, but if not, you can grab your Project Low tickets through me. I also have Beyond Wonderland Chicago and Day Trip as of right now, but all my updated links will be down below if you guys want to grab any of those through me. All right, with that being said, like I mentioned, I'm super excited to have Alex joining us on the podcast. He is going to be doing some interviews for us, and it could not be more warranted. He's absolutely incredible. He is a DJ himself. He is a dance music journalist. I've worked with him in the past, and he's amazing. So we're kicking off interviews, and we have a amazing one to start off with. So today's guest is one of the most electrifying artists in the electronic music scene. He's amassed a loyal fan base through his masked project, Reaper. His unique take on drum and bass has unified dance music fans across subgenres. He has cemented his presence in the United States and the scene abroad as well. He's played some incredible shows. We're really, really excited to dive into how his project has developed, his focus on storytelling through his music, and the renaissance of drum and bass in the United States right now. He has incredible insights and knowledge on this topic. His music is incredible, you guys, and I'm just super excited to dive into his story and share his music with you guys in this episode. So thank you so much, Alex, for handling this one. And with all that being said, please welcome Reaper to the podcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is the Rave Culture Cast. My name is Alex, and we're here with drum and bass ambassador, DJ, producer, and all-around badass, Reaper. What's up, man? How's it going?
It's going good. And actually, I wanted to tell you, I think I've seen you DJ before.
Really?
Yeah. I'm almost positive.
That's entirely possible.
Maybe at the Midway or something like that?
Yes. I've played at the Midway lots of times.
Yeah. I think I've seen you play before.
That's so wild. That's a first for me during an interview.
And also, you come up on social media for me all the time, so
that's fantastic. I love to hear it. Well, I've been following you for some time. Super familiar with your music, big fan. So happy to have you here today. I always like to get into a little background before I get into things, because I'm curious. Like, I heard you come from a musical family, and your dad was a musician. How did your parents kind of spark your passion for music?
I was always surrounded by music in general, and there was one outstanding moment that happened where one of my dad's friends gave me an iPod shuffle with nothing but every single Korn song ever released on it. And so I spent my whole entire, like, basically childhood and teenager years just listening through every single Korn song ever. And it was like every bus ride to school, even in college, like I'm still listening to it. Like I'm like grasping onto this little iPod shuffle.
You know, the Korn to drum and bass pipeline for some reason makes sense.
It does make a lot of sense. Yeah.
And then when you started developing your own taste in music, what were you listening to?
I kind of went into System of a Down.
Makes
And
sense.
then I listened to like a little bit of Skrillex, a little bit of Excision, and then I got really into Noisia.
Again, another like kind of natural progression there.
Yeah. I was mainly using like music as part of the foundation of like my workout culture, because I was obsessed with going to the gym for a while, and I would just use music as fuel, because it like it linked with my brain, and like every time like I put on like Noisia Dead Limit, it was just like
yes, that's
oh.
A number.
Yeah.
when did production and like making music start to become part of the equation?
It actually started very early on.
Yeah.
I had an old compact computer with like FL Studio 4 on it. And it was old. And I would like make ringtones for members of my family and things like that.
I love that. And I hear you play several instruments too.
I do, yeah. I play the keys a little bit. You can see it over here.
Yep.
I got my bass guitars, acoustic guitars, everything over here. I'm not like a legend at guitar, but I know my way around. You can tell me a song, a chord progression, I can play it.
Hey, that's enough to play live though, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
And I hear that in previous iterations, you might have done that as part of a live performance. Do you ever see yourself like incorporating that into a drum and bass performance?
It's a lot of work to put together a live performance. And if I ever do it, I'm going to have to take a lot of time to make sure that it's like done perfectly right.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Can you tell me about your most memorable night out as a music fan?
That's interesting. Let's see. There's been a bunch of wild nights.
100%.
I did take my shirt off at a show about a year ago. I'm not going to say what show it is.
Wait, mask on or mask off?
Mask off. Took my shirt off. I was swinging it around my head like this.
Look, if you're still hitting the gym like you used to, I'm not even mad at it. And even if you aren't.
Yeah, I'm not quite. I just still have the same confidence.
Hey, you know what? I'm not mad at people taking their shirt off. And if you do it, you got to swing it around above your head.
Yes. Yeah.
So when did you realize that you wanted to turn music from a passion into a profession?
It kind of always was going to be a profession. Mm. I've worked a couple different jobs, but for me, music always was my calling. And it happened very naturally. Yeah. And I got to give a lot of credit to my team that I've worked with, because we've all shared the same family culture, the same vision.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I eat, they eat. That's kind of the culture that we developed. So we just built it from the ground up, and we knew that it was going to be a profession.
That's something I really love to hear, and I love the fact that you brought up your team. Because in conversations with music producers, it comes up a lot. Like, one, how did you first start building a team? But also, two, how did you even know it was time to do that in the first place?
That also just happened pretty naturally. At the time, my roommate was Anthony, my manager.
Yeah.
Artist management guy. He is the most intelligent, most well put together and articulate person that I've worked with in the industry. And he helped me be patient and put together this project before, like, I wanted to put out music immediately, but he's like, let's wait.
Yeah.
Let's build something important, basically. Let's build something significant. And that also like pays respect to the past of the drum and bass culture, basically. Yeah. Let's like not jump into this like it's a trend. And that's where we glued together like this. It was pretty amazing.
Well, let's talk about that too. You talked about drum and bass culture and like making sure you were building something that paid respect to drum and bass culture. How did you go about like kind of like exploring the history of drum and bass when you first started to get into it?
YouTube. I was on YouTube every single day.
Yeah.
Yeah, just looking up all these mixes, playlists that people put together, old videos of shows. And I loved like the breakbeat scene, the breakbeat hardcore scene, the jungle scene. I honestly wish that I grew up in the 90s to experience that a little bit.
Yeah.
Before there were cell phones.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It was a beautiful time.
Yeah. But I studied that a little bit, and of course, my sound is nothing like it.
No, it's not.
But I try to understand it just because I love it so much.
Well, I think it's important too for anybody who's, you know, becoming a part of the culture and really wants to place an impact on that, to mm-hmm. understand where it came from, even if that's not like your sole focus, mm-hmm. because it has such a rich history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, masked artists aren't always received well initially. How has your anonymity become like a superpower to you? How do you feel like that has helped kind of push you forward even more?
So the advantages of the mask is that, you know, I could walk around at the festival afterwards and no one knows me.
Yes.
But I am 6'5" and like 245, 250 pounds. So like,
you still stand out in the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. I still stand out. But also it's a brand identity. So as soon as we decided on this, we had this idea of, you know, the music is attached to it. There's a face to it.
Yeah.
But it removes like random white guy from the picture, and right. it just becomes, you know, more about the music.
I mean, and it's a unique brand identity too. Mm-hmm. And now that people are like on board with this, you've become like a global drum and bass ambassador, which is really cool, especially outside of the US, like heading back into like the UK where drum and bass was founded, and even in other countries where drum and bass has continued to be big, you can still, you know, hold on to that anonymity and let the music speak for itself.
Yeah. I will say it was hard to break into the UK scene.
I imagine.
We had a lot of comments about how cheesy the mask thing was and everything like that. And then finally, once we found promoters that were willing to buy in.
Yeah.
Like, we proved them all wrong, especially last summer in London. We were like 20 tickets from sellout. Bristol was also crazy.
That's a city that's tough to break into just in general, because they are so really about the music.
Yeah. I will say most of Central Europe was a little bit more enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
Like Belgium, Netherlands, Germany. But it's definitely been a process to overcome with the whole masked identity thing.
Right.
Because, you know, yeah, I have to show people that I'm genuine. And it's right. not just, you know, it's not just a thing that I'm doing.
Well, I think you do that well through your social media presence, though. Like, it's very clear that this isn't just a gimmick. Mm-hmm. Like, you really want to present the music in the best way possible, but also this is like just another facet of yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm a person on social media.
Yeah.
Which has been hard for me to develop, because I honestly am slightly nervous at times on posting social media.
It doesn't show, but that's, you know, that's
It's more about like, I'm always nervous about what I'm going to say. And like, you know, this is mostly me 3 years ago. I was nervous about what I was going to say, how I was going to send off that tweet, how I was going to post that caption, whatever.
Right.
And now it's more just stream of thought. I'm being myself. And it's so encouraging that people love it.
Well, for anybody that's kind of like coming up right now or struggling with that, because social media is such a big factor of the equation now. And I feel like there's a lot of people that have like fantastic music, but are mm-hmm. struggling to get over that other facet of putting themselves out there. What would you say to them?
I feel like we owe it to ourselves to share our love and our own image with the world. Mm. And also, I don't know if you've seen any of the Reaper sets before.
Yes.
But one of my big things was like, I might look scary, I'm wearing like all this black and this mask, but part of the goal is to teach people to take themselves a little less seriously.
Yeah, you dance like nobody's watching, and I love to see it.
You should have seen me at the LA show this past weekend during soundcheck. I'm just doing karate moves the whole entire time.
Yes, love to see
that. I'm probably going to post a video of it.
I love that. I love yeah. that. Well, I mean, that's like when you get down to the nitty gritty, that's what rave culture is about. Like just yeah. getting out there on the dance floor and being yourself. And if you can't see that reflected through the DJ, you know, that's, I mean, it's a wonderful thing to see a DJ enjoying themselves that much.
Yep.
So one thing you've talked about in your music is educating the audience. How does that look for you? Like, how do you see yourself educating the audience with your music?
So a really good example of how I initiated that was when I went on tour with Kazo. So this is in 2021. I was opening rooms, just like cold open, no one's in there. Sometimes like doors didn't even open like till 5 minutes afterwards. And I'm playing for dubstep kids. They want to go see dubstep or hardstyle or something like that. So I programmed my sets. I always freestyle, but I programmed my sets in a way where I knew I can play music that feels a little bit familiar or relevant to them. And then part of the thing was taking myself a little less seriously. And I'd go up there and I would like hit play on a song for a little 60-second section. And I'd jump in front of the decks and just start skanking out. And people are like, okay, I kind of get it. I get it a little bit. And I think that's part of what I say. Like, every single one of my sets is a clinic to teach people how to love drum and bass a little bit more.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
And you said it wasn't like you felt like it wasn't too difficult, at least in the United States, to get people on board. Why do you think it was so easy to, kind of pick up on this?
I think because we have this kind of like the door is open, come on in policy. You know, we weren't gatekeepers at all, which I've been to some clubs, especially with like older promoters where, you know, people only talk about jungle or they only respect, you know, the older heads. And this is a big doors open, come on in policy where we want to introduce new fans. We want to teach people how to love drum and bass.
The more the merrier. I love to hear that. That's something. I mean, I've been doing this since 99, and the only thing I ever wanted to see was dance music get as big in the United States as I saw it everywhere else. Because already at that point, the UK and Europe were already on board. They were already doing massive things there, and I just wanted to see that happen in the United States. So to see that continue like now has been so gratifying, and to see people like you like supporting that open door policy is amazing, really.
I mean, and another very welcoming thing was the ratio of women to men at shows.
Oh, see, that's something I love to hear, because usually drum and bass shows tend to be very male heavy.
And so I had multiple comments when I started touring, especially with tour managers. They were like, man, there's so many girls on the front row. And like, there's so many girls that feel comfortable and are having fun. And I think that lends to drum and bass having so many different subgenres and flavors that everyone can enjoy.
Well, it also says something about people feeling safe at your shows too, and feeling like they can be themselves and come out and be safe at your shows. That says a lot about what's going on with the people that you're working with too.
And if anyone is being dangerous, I'll fight them.
That, hey, you know what? I would not. Nobody wants to come into contact with you, man.
No, I'm a gentle giant, honestly, but
I believe it.
I'll throw hands if I have to.
Well, since you were talking about drum and bass's like long-standing community in the States, I kind of want to like touch on that. Can you talk about the American drum and bass community and how you see yourself like fitting into to what it is?
So there's definitely been a growth process. When I started releasing bootlegs back in like 2018, 2019, there was definitely a lot of apprehension with some of the older heads and the people that already understood drum and bass. A lot of people just called it fast dubstep, which was almost what I was doing because I was doing halftime drop, full-time drop. But now that I've been like developed into the scene, the whole entire, I'd say almost everyone in the US understands me as a drum and bass artist, as a gateway to North American drum and bass. And the most amazing and fulfilling part of it is there's so many people that they find one of my songs or one of my remixes, and they're like, you introduced me to like Break or Dimension or Sub Focus or whatever. They're like, I pulled up a playlist and like the seventh song down was Caliber. And they're like, I love this stuff now.
What a gratifying feeling, though, because I know one of your goals is to be the gateway to drum and bass, and you've been able to do that. And I know there's been like a lot of talk recently about who revitalized the drum and bass scene in the United States, and whether or not it's important who did that, do you feel like it really needed to be revitalized? And how do you feel about being a part of that?
It's always been around. It's always been like structured, healthy, probably the best part of the rave scene. Honestly, like the best people ever. I've gone to a lot of weeklies over the past 10 years. And the word that I like to use right now is it's going through a renaissance.
Yeah, I think that's a good word for it.
Yeah.
That's a good word for it. That means it's never been anywhere, but it's healthy and continuing to be healthy. And
yes, it's continuing to be healthy. It's taking its multivitamin right now.
I like that.
Yeah.
can you talk about some of the challenges you've had to overcome as you started to become part of the international, as you started to receive international acclaim?
I would say the greatest challenge that I faced was post-COVID trying to get back on tour, and it was a financial challenge.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wasn't making a lot of money.
Yeah.
I actually had to spend a lot of money and lose a lot of money in order to get on the road and to get in front of people and play for them.
Right.
But the vision has always been there. I just decided, you know what, if I go into $15,000 of debt, I'm going to pay that off one day, and I'm going to make it, you know? So,
hey, that's like an important lesson to learn, though. Like, if the vision is clear, sometimes it's going to be really difficult before it gets a lot better.
Yeah. And I'm pretty good at money management. I'm not advising anyone to go into debt. but it was something that was necessary to get on the road, especially post-COVID. All the flights were expensive. All the hotels were expensive. My fee was really low. And now it's all starting to come up and pay off a little bit.
I love to hear that. I mean, you're talking to me in between two tour stops. So if that says anything about how things are going right now, it's also drum and bass is healthy, but Reaper is also healthy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I want to get into the Challenger EP and your current tour. And I want to hear about storytelling in your music, because it's not always a huge focus in a medium that pushes singles over larger works. And dance music often lacks words over two-bar phrases. Mm-hmm. So how do you approach storytelling in your music? Because I know that's important for you.
So Challenger was intended to be a concept album. Mm. And that did not work out. Last year, I was dealing with a broken leg.
Oh, wow.
That carved out my whole entire hip joint. And so I ended up having to get a total hip replacement last December.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the whole album, as I finished it around December, it turns itself into a much emotional piece, like a collection of emotional songs about facing adversity and learning to take care of yourself a little bit better. And there's some angry emotions in there too. I don't know if you've heard the song Cold Case.
Yeah.
But that's a little bit about envy and jealousy. And I didn't write all the lyrics for that. Bella Renee wrote most of them.
Right.
But that really talks about how you see someone else and you wish they were them. And I felt that every time I was walking through the airport. I was limping. I was just limping through the airport. And I'm like, dang, I wish I had a healthy leg, you know? I wish I wasn't doing this right now. So every song kind of turned into more of like this emotional banger sort of thing.
Well, I think that's an incredible poignant thing to like kind of push through all of that through your music. You're still doing storytelling, but it sounds like the pathway of that story took a different turn.
Oh yeah, it definitely did. The whole entire collection of seven songs took a much different turn. I will say though, those seven songs are not the end of Challenger.
No.
That's all I had finished. And I'm going to be adding on a little bit more.
So are you saying there's going to be a Challenger part two?
It might just be Challenger Extra Deluxe Super Version. It might just be more Challenger. Because
I'd love to hear that.
I can double that album, but they're not done yet.
I love to hear that. That's fantastic. The EP is so fantastic, and it's great to hear that there's more coming.
Mm-hmm.
how do you integrate visual storytelling into that? Like, how do you see that working out? Since you've talked about social media, and I know visual storytelling is important to you as well.
So we built out all the visuals for the album in Unreal Engine 5. And we have this whole entire world built. And it was basically meant to feel like you're like in this isolated oasis.
Yeah.
And each song, you travel farther and farther and farther. And then you eventually end up in this mine shaft / cavern. And then when you hit black fires, you're going through the cavern and there's fires engulfing you. And then in Cold Case, I actually like see a part of myself that's on the table.
Yeah.
That's on like a table going into a portal where I'm entering a different dimension. Some people think it looks silly because I'm like floating around like this.
I was trying to figure out what the what that meant, but that's a fantastic explanation.
Oh yeah. And I'm a big fan of like Event Horizon. Have you seen that movie?
Yes. Yes. Actually, it's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. So it kind of played off of that. It was a parallel to that. But that was also just me wishing, you know, I was someone else. Like I had something else.
Well, in a day and age where like music video, there was a time when music videos were such a pivotal part of a brand and they were bigger, but in a day, like now that I'm starting, it's nice to have a visual element attached to the music because mm-hmm. it brings you deeper into that world.
Yeah, I think it's really important too. And it's also just another way to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because you can listen to the song a million times and you see the visual and you're like,
now I either get it.
You understand it more or you enjoy it more.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. And now you're embarking on a 4-continent tour.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever imagine that you'd become a global ambassador for drum and bass in this way?
I always wanted to, and it was always a mission. It's hard to imagine. It's still hard to process. I did 18 or 19 countries last year. And so already that was, it's still hard to take it all in.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm still just trying to do my thing, do myself, and just give everyone the best of me.
That's a fantastic answer. Perfectly said. Something that's been a constant in your career is you wanting to become America's gateway to drum and bass.
Oh, yeah.
How do you think that's going and how do you want to carry that further into the rest of your career?
Well, going back to the family culture thing.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to work with and collaborate the other people in America that are working on drum and bass.
Yeah.
And I've been very thankful that the friends I've made along the way, like Kamarion, Justin Hawks, Bensley, Rebel Scum, Joel Cruz, those are all the people that I get to tour with now or get to bring on tour with me.
That's beautiful.
And I think that's part of how we're pushing it forward. We're all working together, you know. It's an amazing thing. It's really beautiful.
I really respect. There's a trend in dance music right now where you see kind of like label focused tours or brand focused tours where people are bringing their friends with them
mm-hmm.
and they're kind of creating an entire culture around their brand. And I love to see that. And I love to hear that that's something that you're doing because some of those people that you just name checked, these are the people right now in drum and bass in the United States that are pushing the culture forward. And, you know, I love to see that it's not just about you, that it's about that family atmosphere, because that is so the antithesis of dance music.
And yeah. And just in a practical sense too.
Yeah.
Like touring with those people, I know they're reliable. They're going to show up on time. They're great DJs. They have amazing music. And for example, in Vancouver, I had food poisoning that night. So I texted Rebel Scum like 10 minutes before the end of my set. I was like, look, I need to take a breather.
Yeah.
I need you to play a little bit extra. And he's like, I got you, man.
That's beautiful. I mean, yeah. that's the best you could ask for.
Yeah, exactly. It's family culture. It's perfect.
I love it. I love that word too. Family culture.
That's
perfectly stated. Well, I always like to end, and I've been doing this question for years now, but I always like to end on this question. What excites you about the future of dance music?
I'd say the most exciting part is seeing the young people get into it.
Yeah.
Like the young, like, I'd say high school, like late grade school, college kids
Yeah.
that start to love it so much because you know that one day they're going to be adults, maybe have kids, maybe have a family, and they're going to share it with the world themselves.
I
And
love that too.
yeah, I'd say my second favorite would be when someone comes to a show and you can see them light up, like a switch just flips.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, they get it. Which people think I can't see through the mask, I can see everyone in the crowd. And I've seen people that are just like standing there, and then it just turns on right there. And I feel like the future of dance music is about those light bulb moments right there.
It is. That's when you know you've got somebody go, you know you've got like a lifer. There's people that come into dance music for like a season, for a little bit, like in their 20s, they're going out to parties and then they move on. But then when you see that light bulb moment on the dance floor, you know you've just sparked the interest for somebody who's never ever going to leave.
Exactly. And also just the community that dance music promotes.
Yeah.
I think it's good for the world in general.
It is.
Yeah, it
It
really
is.
is. And
So is.
honestly, the metal and hardcore scene, that too,
Yeah.
like really, really great
Well,
crowd
no,
that.
I it was never my thing, but I've been to metal shows before, and I've seen a similar way of taking care of each other at metal shows that I've seen at dance music shows.
Yep, there's definitely a mutual respect, mutual love, and I think that's generally going to make the world better.
It is. It is, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak to us today. This has been fantastic, and I hope you get some rest before your next tour stop. But again, fantastic to have you, and much respect for what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're great.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yep.
Thanks again.
Yep. Take it easy, man. Let's stay in
You
touch.
too.